Welcome to the Sexy and the Squirrel podcast, the podcast that turns dog training on its tail with a whirlwind of playful learning that achieves real life results. Each episode is packed with inventive games-based training solutions supported by our Games Club, the ultimate dog training membership, with a team of pro trainers helping you every step of the way. Think of us as your go-to squad of experts. I'm Lauren Langman, a top-level agility competitor, best-selling author, owner of one of the largest dog training facilities in the UK, and a founder of the Sexy and the Squirrel Challenge, a challenge that's helped over 130,000 dog owners get real-life results. Our team consists of experts in scent, detection, obedience, naughty but nice, search and rescue, tracking, the intricacies of why your dog does what they do, and so much more. Our mission, whether you're wrangling a bitey sharky puppy or you're teaching an old dog new tricks, we are here to help you be the very best dog owner that you can be for your dog. So grab your dog, their favourite reward, and a sense of adventure. It's time to transform your training sessions. Ready, set, play. Welcome to the Sexy and a Squirrel podcast, powered by the Games Club. Today, I'm joined by the wonderful Dave. And Dave, we're talking lifestyling, right?
Lifestyling. It's a little word with so many meanings, and actually such a really big topic. And as you know, with the time you know we've been training, it's something I talk a lot about. So it's really good to get it on a podcast and let everyone know about it.
So lifestyling, I know that when we first talked about it, I definitely talk about this and you talk about this, we just talk about it with slightly different language. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge here, because we're both talking about like problems and dogs maybe going wrong at certain points. And both of us saying really it's down to the lifestyle. So actually lifestyle plays a massive part in it. And it was really funny because you mentioned your mum and I mentioned my mum a lot in this, because I go, oh, mum, it's just the way that it's the lifestyle that's going wrong. Or like it's what we allow and how we live with our dogs. And for me, how we live with our dogs to get the best results for our relationship. So for me, my definition of lifestyling would be how I live with my dog to get the very best from my dog and to give my dog the best I can. So that's kind of where I see lifestyle in. How about you? If you're explaining it to someone who's never heard of this before, Dave.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, because I think this is dog training in general. There's so many different variations of the same thing, but ultimately we're talking about the same thing, but very often they get miscommunicated because people are having that chocolate conversation. So yeah, lifestyling I think is a really important thing. And just as you say, it's the lifestyle you have with your dog, both at home, when you're out, when you're traveling. Everything that encompasses your lifestyle with the dog has an impact on the dog's behavior and your relationship with the dog. And very often people I think isolate things too much. And we were talking about this with training, weren't we? Sometimes it's easy to isolate training. So lifestyle is about everything you do with your dog in every moment with your dog, and making sure that each part of that lifestyle you have with the dog is right and enriching for both of you.
And there's this brilliant saying, and I love this saying, and it is you get what you tolerate. And for me, lifestyling really shows a lot of that as well within a dog and a dog relationship and a dog handler relationship. Because for me, one thing I will not tolerate is I will not tolerate a lot of barking in the house. Like for me, it's just a no. Like I'm not a big fan of having a lot of barking. That's not to say some of our listeners can't have a barky house. It's to say for me, I just don't tolerate it. It's something that I will not tolerate. I won't tolerate with having a multi-dog household, multi-barking dogs. And so I really believe that lifestyling also is a level of what is your lifestyle? What do you want? What are you willing to accept? What are you willing to tolerate? For example, in lifestyle for my dogs, pulling on a lead doesn't really faze me, doesn't really fuss me. Whereas I know for some of the owners, some of the students, some of the people out that we train in the arena and at the site at Bowerland HQ, where we do all of our training, they really don't want a dog that pulls on lead, but they don't mind the barking. And so I think lifestyling for me is very individual, right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. And I think this is the bit that people sometimes get a bit hung up on, because what's okay for somebody's lifestyle might not be okay for somebody else's lifestyle. And this is just life in general. And I think very often people go, oh, you shouldn't let your dog do this, or you need to get your dog to do that. But you've got to allow your dog, or not allow your dog, to do whatever fits in with your lifestyle. But what's really important is that it's a household lifestyle. And one of the things I see very often is that You know, one person in the house allows the dog to do something, whereas the other person in the house doesn't allow the dog to do something. And I think this is where the confusion sets in and actually is the start of problems. So, you know, very often people will say, oh, don't let your dogs on the sofa. That I can tell you every single dog I've had, whether it be a Malinois, a German Shepherd, a Cocker Spaniel, they're allowed to chill on the sofa because actually, you know, the lifestyle for me and my dogs is that when they're in the house, they're just chilling. But then for some people, you might not necessarily want a German Shepherd or a Malinois lying on your sofa if you haven't got the room for humans to sit on. So it is very much an individual thing. And I think often people try and get shoehorned into a box. And I talk about this a lot. You know, I'm quite into human psychology. So I talk about the Ash experiment quite a lot, which is the peer-to-peer pressure where you see people try and conform to other people. And that's not what lifestyle is about for life in general. So, yeah, I think it's really important. The lifestyle is your individual lifestyle. So if you want the dog to lie on the sofa, then hey, let the dog lie on the sofa. But equally, if you don't want the dog to lie on the sofa, then that's okay too. Don't let the dog lie on the sofa. And I think you make a really good point about lead pulling. So, you know, when I'm working with Biscuit, my little Cocker Spaniel, she's what, 9 kilograms. So actually her pulling on the lead is neither here nor there to me. But then when I'm working with some of the Malinois and German Shepherds, that could be, you know, 40 kilos, you know, they're probably weighed nearly as much as me sometimes. And I definitely don't want them dragging me to the park. So the lifestyle for the, you know, the big dogs, the German Shepherds and the Malinois, is slightly different to that of Biscuit, purely because of the size aspect. So again, pulling on the lead, you know, if you accept it, then that's fine. If you don't accept it, then that's also fine.
What I love about that, Dave, and this is something that I would always say with my household of multi-dogs, fair doesn't necessarily mean equal. And so how I'd explain that is, I don't know, last night, for example, Brave, I was sat down with, and she was all over me, and I was giving her a bit of a massage. She's a bit sore in her back, and I was like rubbing her back. Whereas actually, I asked Tokyo to go and sit on his bed. It doesn't mean that you have to let all the dogs do the same thing. So for me, Blink, I might invite up on the sofa, but I would ask Tokyo sometimes to go sit on his bed. He's a much bigger dog. And so just like you said, pulling on lead, I'll accept from Blink or my 6 kilo dogs, really. And actually a bigger dog, I might have to consider it differently because it might have a physical aspect to it or a pain aspect to it. And also for me, how is their behavior generally? So Tokyo's given every luxury he could be because, let's be honest, he puts no foot wrong in any direction. Whereas you get a little monkey that is, I don't know, barking out the window or lunging or reacting to people, or you're not going to give them freedom to run around and watch the window all day, right? Like that's something that you have to consider in the lifestyle. What are they doing in their daily life that maybe isn't helping them outside? And I think you do need to look at the individual dog and then design the lifestyle around them whilst you're building some behavior. What do you think?
Yeah, totally. And what you've got to consider is your lifestyle has then a knock-on effect of some of those behaviours that you might or might not be trying to manage or eradicate. So, and we talk about this a lot, you know, certainly in the working dog capacity, is if, you know, for one of the exercises we have to teach our operational patrol dogs is that they have to bite and apprehend someone, but then have to let go on an instant command. And so that's really important. But if the dog is then allowed to wander around the house and pick up items and not let them go immediately, then actually that's going to have a knock-on effect on what you're expecting the dog to do in that training and operational environment, because for 90% of the time it's allowed to walk around the house and the garden picking up socks and shoes and whatever else it might take its fancy and not letting go, you know, and then people wonder why they can't then get the dog to release a bite sleeve, which they absolutely are loving. So that lifestyle piece is really important, and it's not necessarily about, I think this is the other misconception, is that you're taking away all the nice things for the dog. You're not, you're just managing things in a way that the dog is really, really clear in terms of what is and what isn't acceptable. And like you said at the start, I talk to my mom about this all the time, because it's easy to fall into the trap of just letting dogs be dogs, and we want dogs to be dogs, absolutely, but there is, in the same way you'd manage children, that there are boundaries, and that lifestyle needs to include those boundaries as to what the dogs are allowed to do and what the dogs are not allowed to do, and be really consistent with it.
And I love that you touched on the working dog. Obviously, you operationally have worked dogs from the forces. You've taught all over the world. You literally understand working dogs. Me the same. I understand working dogs. I feel very well. I feel sometimes lifestyling can really help to create and cultivate a dog who really wants to work, because actually you've shaped the lifestyle in that way that work becomes very apparent. Now, I don't know if you want to give an example of this with Biscuit. So Biscuit is your working spaniel. She's an amazing little dog. She searched at mega spaces from the summit right through to the Queen's funeral. And you've had some amazing opportunities, some real Gucci experiences with her. But I know we were chatting and you were like, God, I would never let her be chaos and playing all over the house. And I would never let her be searching in my own house, because actually in my own house, she's a really chilled dog. And yet you see her work and she's a machine. Like, she's a 9 kilo machine. She is not like a little bit intense. She's a lot intense, right?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And we worked a lot with, you know, people who raise working dogs as volunteers. And again, there's this real misconception that, you know, a dog, and yes, so for Biscuit, as a prime example, you know, she will jump on anything. She will climb on anything. She's searched in tiny crevices in old World War II bunkers full of junk in the back of cars. She searched all over. But in the house, you know, she's not jumping on my dining room table. She's not jumping on the back of the sofas. She's not, you know, running up and down the stairs, because for her and for all dogs, I think they need to be able to have an off switch and be able to chill out and zone out in exactly the same way that humans need an off switch. But very often I see people, especially when they're raising dogs that they want to perform a job, where they're going, yeah, we want the dog to jump on tables and that, and absolutely in a certain operational environment that's what we want them to do, but that doesn't mean to say that they jump on dining room tables every day. And I've been horrified sometimes at videos I've seen of people developing working dogs, and they're, you know, in people's houses jumping on the dining room table and the kitchen counter and jumping on the back of the sofas, and it's really, really not necessary in order to develop a dog that really wants to work. What is really,
I did do a video the other day, Dave, and you'll giggle. I did a video of Classic running around the sofa on the top of the sofa, the dog video. So I was like, get on top of the sofa, and she was like, what?
Yeah, because they'll do it, won't they? If I let Biscuit do it, she would run around like a lunatic.
So funny. She's literally on the top of the sofa, running around the top of the sofa, screaming her little head off. It was hilarious. And you know what? I was like, how on earth does this happen in normal life? Like, who lets this happen? Like, yeah. And we were doing it to show, obviously, a naughty dog, and we needed a naughty dog. So Classic took the role really well, which is dead funny. However, I really, really do feel that so many people just allow that to come into play. And let's talk a little bit more practical here, because I think it's really important we land this for people. What would you suggest, like, just maybe a few of your tips here, Dave, to get that? Because people are listening and going, yeah, I want that. So how do you actually get that? So Biscuit comes in the house. No, she's not racing around with a Kong or looking for a scent or a search. No, she's not badgering you all the time. Like, what are some of the lifestyling, like, tips or pointers you'd have for helping to create that? Because she is a nice, relaxed dog.
Yeah, she is. She's got a really nice off switch and you know, if people have seen her work, she's got a really nice on switch as well. But I think it's part of that lifestyling piece is the compartmentalization. And this is something I talk a lot around, is she's very clear in terms of the compartments of her life that she's allowed to work in and she's not allowed to work in, and when she's chilled out. And it's just about being consistent. So, and I'm not saying for 1 minute that, you know, just because Biscuit chills out in the house, that's right, and everyone who doesn't have a dog that chills out in the house is wrong. This is just what works for me and my lifestyle. But I would never, and I've never, you know, I've had her from since she was a puppy, so she's never played, you know, chasing games in the house, although my 8-year-old son does run up and down the house like a loony with her chasing her. So, you know, sometimes these things happen. But you know, from a training and kind of lifestyle in perspective, I wouldn't throw a Kong around in the house. I wouldn't play any searching games in, you know, the house. If I wanted to do any of that, it'd be in the garden. or in the garage where I've got some search stuff set up. So it's very, very clear to her in terms of when I go into these areas. And again, it's utilizing the ABC of the area. Once the dog goes into the particular area, the dog knows what is expected from them. So when Biscuit comes into the lounge, she knows it's time to chill out. So, you know, she will have some natural chews like pig's ears or something like that. She'll be allowed to chew on, because you need to give them something. You can't just expect a dog to just sit there and twiddle their paws. You know, you need to give them some enrichment, and you need to give them something to do, especially when they're puppies, so that they learn to chill out. So those are the things I'd say, is compartmentalize everything. So have a space where they can burn off energy, because dogs need to burn off energy. And that doesn't necessarily mean going for a massive walk. It can just be setting up some activities in the garden.
I love that what you do really aligns with games-based training very well, because I know one of the things, I've got it in the room actually, it's just over there, it's the scent and search wall, and that would be something very, very simple that people can do in their home, because you're not saying go out and walk your dog necessarily if they're really high energy. Actually, sometimes get them to do something that's pretty mental. Get them to use their brain, and let's actually ask them to. I love doing our scent work, and I know we've got a podcast on scent, but this, and not this one because I know where there won't be time, but that for me is such a nice way to do it, isn't it? To give them something to do that's appropriate in their lifestyle, but it's not necessarily high energy as a job. So it's not like let's come in and do high energy, because high energy only tends to create more high energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I always use the analogy of Mo Farah. You know, he didn't start off being a marathon long distance runner. He built himself up over time. And sometimes that's what happens. People think they have to exercise the dog more, which ends up making them fitter, stronger, faster, more energetic, more wanting to do more stuff. Whereas actually having a compartment within your household environment where you can go and do some scent work or boundary games or whatever it might be, just to engage their brain. And, you know, that's the one thing I really try and do with the dogs, is engage their brain instead of their lungs and heart, is the analogy I use. Focus on the brain and not the lungs and heart in the house. And then when you go out and take them for a walk or you go for a run, you know, that's when you can exercise the heart and the lungs.
Now, the other thing I'd say when we think lifestyling, because again, lifestyling, how you live with your dog, how your dog lives with you, what you do on a day-to-day basis together to grow in the direction you want. Because ultimately, that is what this is about, Dave, right? Like, we all want to grow in the same direction. We want to grow in the same direction as our dog, and we want our dog to grow in the direction with us. So if we think lifestyling, let's think of someone with a poor recall, Dave. So someone's got a poor recall in the house on a day-to-day basis. For me, if my dog's had a poor recall in the house on a day-to-day basis, I would be acknowledging times in the house where they would be ignoring me when I'm asking them for something, or yep, when I'm looking for them, I don't know, to acknowledge something, I'd want some more focus and more attention, but that would also hit my lifestyle. And I'll give you another example. I had a behavior client who had a real struggle, and the struggle was biting cars. And I said to her, is it happening in the house? Do you see anything in the house that like resembles this? Do you see any chase problems or any herding problems or any problems? She was like, not at all. I did a house visit, and the dog was basically, every time the washing machine was going around, was nailing the washing machine. So the washing machine would go and it would nail the washing machine nailing the washing machine. And I was like, how did you not put those two together? So for me, a lot of what's happening outside can be seen as something that's rehearsed or practiced inside, whether that's good or bad. So for me, recall with a dog that's not recalling, are they ignoring me in lots of different places in the house? And with something that's going on outside, like chasing, barking, lunging, reacting, is there something they're doing in the house that they're practicing? Because often what dogs practice more and more of, they start to become. And so this dog turned, well, he just turned into a horror for biting the washing machine, Dave. So what do you see that could maybe relate to that?
Yeah, that you will always see something within your lifestyle that shows you why you've got problems in areas where you've got problems with the dog. So again, I use a you know, recall's a really good example. So if the dog's in the garden and you're stood in the house shouting the dog to come in and it's not coming in, and then you have to go and get the dog because it's not, you know, there's your recall problem you know, in your own home and within your lifestyle. So and there's lots of things, like if the dog and one of the things, I go back to the working dog capacity, it's always one of the big challenges is dogs releasing bites on sleeves and things. But then you see them just playing fetch with the dog and they can't get the ball off the dog. And you're saying, well, if you can't get the ball off the dog, then that's why it's then bleeding into the exercises. And your lifestyle will give you all of those clues if you look hard enough. Now, the challenge with lifestyling is because you're surrounded by it day in, day out, it's really difficult to see. Like, that's a prime example that you just described with the washing machine. That's just normal. That's just what the dog does. But when you've got a fresh set of eyes on it, you go, oh, that's why the dog's doing that. So
how on earth have you missed this? I was like, the dog is nailing the washing machine. Or like when you've asked a lady I worked with recently, is your dog reactive to anything in the house? She's like, no, not at all. Anyway, I went into the house again, did a bit of a home visit, and the dog barks every time anything changes on the TV. So if there's an animal appears on the TV, if there's a noise on the TV, if there's something unusual on the TV, to the point that the woman's had 7 or 8 TVs. I'm like, how have we not noticed this? Like, how is this not a problem? And yet, you're right, you get used to it.
You do. It's funny. It's a really good example of this. So there's a game called the Wheel of Fortune where you have to guess the word. And it was on the TV, and the words was motorway service station, but this person had filled all the words in, all the letters in, apart from, I think it was the O and the Y or something. And it clearly, like, you could clearly make out this was motorway service station, but the person playing the game didn't have a clue, but all the audience were watching it. Everyone at home was watching it. Everyone on social media was like, what are you doing? But in the moment, the person just could not see that this word was motorway service. Honestly, if you try and watch it online, it's hilarious. But it does just show you that when you're surrounded and in the moment, it's really, really difficult to identify some of those things. And when we talk about lifestyle and with dogs, it's because they live with us every day and we just accept their nuances as them being dogs and us being owners. We sometimes miss the clues to help us solve some of those problems. So what I would say is really pay attention to lifestyling, really pay attention to having that compartmentalization of behavior. So where are you going to do your high energy stuff? Where are you going to be really relaxed? Are you going to let the dog on the sofa or not? And it doesn't matter whether you do or don't, but have some real compartmentalization in yours and your dog's life that makes it really black and white and really clear to see then when those lifestyling changes are affecting the dog's behavior.
And so true, like, really is. And I truly believe that you don't have to tolerate stuff. Like, I really believe lifestyle can change things for you. A couple of examples. Tokyo thought it was okay for about a month to mark in the house. I was like, we're not tolerating that. We're just not. Like, it's not something I'll tolerate. And yet there are a lot of people out there that will tolerate and live with that, right? They'll live with that and they'll live with that long term. And so for me, I think in lifestyle, if you can identify something you really don't like, you can put in an implementation plan if you're aware of it. I think being aware of it. Another one, for me, is barking. So barking generally, again, it's lifestyle. For me, it's a lifestyle strategy. So it's putting in the strategies in place to minimize the barking, whether that's enrichment, whether that's calmness training, whether that's using the AOK9 calm supplement or a combination of all of the above plus training. There are so many things you can do, but it's all about the lifestyle. Whereas if you tolerate it or if you allow it, you will build the incorrect lifestyle. And it's very easy to do that. Now, you've worked a lot with operational handlers, Dave, and handlers who are handling their dogs all over the world, from Montenegro to Birmingham in the UK. So you really have worked everywhere. What would you say is a common problem that you see with handlers and their dogs at home that might upset the working life or the operational dog, but actually you're seeing in the home is just a typical problem? Something that goes wrong in the house, for whether that be the walkers in the dog's early stages or whether that be the actual operational handlers?
I think it's a mix of things. I think the biggest thing you see from a lifestyling perspective is very often people don't appreciate the knock-on effect. So you know, we talked about allowing the little things to go and tolerating the little things. Well, in a working dog capacity, those are the things that slowly mount up and cause a problem. So, you know, pulling on a lead is a big one. So very often people with patrol dogs, you know, they're rushing to let the dog to go to the toilet because they need to get back in the car to go back out on patrol, or, you know, they're at the weekend and they're going out and they need to give the dog a quick walk around the block. So they let the dog pull them around the block. And so the dog's having lots of these opportunities to not walk the heel. Mm-hmm. And so then when they come to do an obedience routine or they're trying to do a heel work routine, actually, 90% of that dog's life, they're allowed to pull on the lead and go where they want and all these other nuances. But then the dog's not able to switch correctly into that working mode because their lifestyle has just allowed them to slip in terms of that sharpness and black and white kind of behavior. So that's the big thing I see. I think everyone's guilty of this in life. We rush around so much, don't we, in life generally, that the dogs are kind of the ones that suffer in the end because we don't necessarily give them the due attention that we should be. You know, we walk them and we're on our phone, or you know, we're trying to get them out, but then we're also trying to get back to going to the shopping, or the deliveries coming, or something in that lifestyle. It's those tiny little slips that kind of add up and add up and add up is what makes a big difference. So I think that's true of the working dog capacity as well as the kind of pet dog capacity, really.
I love that you hit on that, because we are often in a rush, and so then we let things slip. For example, if I'm in a rush, I'll often not have them on lead, but that can create more arousal on the walk. That can create more, like, they expect to be off lead from the minute I get out. And then when I do put them on the lead, that can cause them frustration because they're not used to necessarily being put on the lead in that scenario. And so that is just lifestyling. Again, it's being in a hurry and me going, oh, I'm trying to kill like 10 birds with one stone and I want to get out. And so, yeah, I truly believe that. Like, we're not really that present with our dogs or even ourselves some days, are we? The phone's there.
100%. Yeah.
You can fill the car or charge the electric or whatever you've got to do. Like, there's so many things to be doing that lifestyling allows easy slips when we're not present, right? Like, if we're not present, say you did have the rule of no dogs on the sofa. If you're Matt, you have the rule of no dogs on the sofa. I'm quite liberal with the sofa. Matt is like, no, since we moved house, he's like, no dogs on the sofa. And so for me, It's those moments of, I don't know, you're chatting on the phone or you're doing some work and the dog sort of creeps up next to you and you just stroke them and then you're like, oh no, how did you get there and what am I cutting?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's those little moments that actually, that's the same as I get to a big agility competition, I lead out on the start line and the dog creeps up and then jumps the first jump because you're just allowing boundaries to be grey. And if you allow boundaries to be grey in lifestyle, then your boundaries will be grey in real life.
100%. Yeah. And that's what's so important about the lifestyling piece is the black and white lifestyle will benefit the dog and will benefit you as owners. And ultimately that's what makes our life with dogs great, isn't it? You know, we've both got a set of boundaries as owners and dogs, and you know, ultimately then we can enjoy having them in our lives.
I also know, Dave, and I think this is really worth acknowledging, I know that Biscuit would be a dream dog to have around. And whenever we've looked after her or been around you, she's just very easy. I equally know if you took Tokyo, apart from being sometimes a bit of a wet lettuce, I mean, God, he's a sop, but he'd be very easy for you. You could take him anywhere. You could do anything with him. He's going to be a very easy dog to adapt and live with because all of those things are already put into place. You're not taking on behavior cases. You're not taking on problems. You're not taking on a dog that's got lots of struggles and lots of issues because that lifestyling component is pretty in place. And I think it makes them more adaptable, easier to live with, nicer dogs to own because they're actually, the lifestyling piece of it is already being catered for. And I believe I could train Biscuit to do agility and I believe you could train Tokyo to do scent and operational work. And I truly believe that. And I feel that the lifestyling component is what has allowed that.
Yeah, I agree, because you've hit all the nail on the head. What lifestyling brings you is a more balanced dog, a more clear-headed dog, because they know where those boundaries are. And then ultimately, they're an easier dog to train and an easier dog to live with. And that makes them really adaptable then. You know, like anyone could grab Biscuit and go and take her for a walk and she would just potter next to them. She wouldn't run off. You could take her to any house and she'd just chill out. And that's, you know, I'm not saying I'm right and everyone else is wrong, but that for me is what I want from a dog, is that, you know, if something happened to me and somebody needed to look after her, then I don't want her to be a nuisance for somebody. So yeah, and it just boils down to that lifestyling and compartmentalization. So they're really clear in terms of what behavior is expected from them when.
And what I really love is that, you know what, they're happy too in that scenario, because a dog who fits in everywhere is probably a dog who's easier, happier, more chilled, more relaxed in their own skin. So yeah. Now, last question before we dash, and I think this is good. You just touched on at the beginning the chocolate conversation. What do you want to say about the chocolate conversation?
My favorite conversation.
Go on. Just touch on, for everybody listening, why you feel that's relevant to lifestyling.
This is a podcast on its own, Lauren. The chocolate conversation podcast. This is what we need to do. It is my favorite topic. So I've done lots of leadership and management work, and I always talk about the chocolate conversation. So the chocolate conversation, very, very quickly, is if you write the word chocolate down and ask 20 people to say the first thing that comes to their head, very often you'll get 20 different answers. And this is exactly the point I was making about lifestyling. So if we talk about lifestyling, we'll have lots and lots of different interpretations of what lifestyling is. So hopefully we've covered a few things over this podcast, which helps just put a little bit of clarity over what it is, what it involves, what it's all about, and why it's important. So we're hopefully now avoiding a chocolate conversation around lifestyling.
Get you. That was nice and succinct. I'm impressed. And yes, okay, I hear everybody. They want us to do one on the chocolate conversation, so we'll make sure that happens. Dave, this has been excellent. I know that I love how you put that at the end, really, that basically lifestyling is everything that is intertwined with our days with our dogs. And for me, it does really matter. Like, I know that I can create a great working dog or a great pet or a great dog through lifestyling. And I believe if you get lifestyling right, it makes it all very easy. If you get lifestyling wrong, it can make it all a little bit harder, a little bit tricksy. Thank you for joining us. It's been incredible having you once again.
Thank you very much.
And literally, guys, that was this episode of the Sexy and the Squirrel podcast. We will see you next time, where we're going to dive into something a little bit different. And I'm not going to tell you too much because I don't want to ruin the surprise. Make sure you share this podcast with your friends, your families, your lover, your long-lost lover, your sister or your brother. And we'll see you all real soon.